Welcome to Parents' Perspective. Hold my hand, Kira's mom instructed her 5-year-old daughter as they followed Grandpa's casket out of the chapel. Why did they say all of those prayers? Kira began. In memory of Grandpa, Kira's mom explained. Well, Kira pondered that information. Can he hear them?
Where's Grandpa?
Whispered 4-year-old Justin, prancing down the ramp ahead of his sister and parents.
Is he in that box?
When will Grandpa come back? Kira's lower lip trembled.
Oh, sweetie, her mom hugged her close. Grandpa's not coming back. He died and we're all going to the cemetery to bury him. Kira looked dazed.
Hey, called Justin, marching into the crowd following the gurney. This is like a parade.
From a parent's perspective, how can we best answer our children's questions about death? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest today is an expert when it comes to helping children with grief. Linda Goldman is certified as a fellow in thanatology, death, dying, and bereavement, as well as a licensed clinical professional counselor and a national certified counselor. She shares workshops, courses, and training, and teaches as an adjunct professor at Johns Hopkins University. Her recent books include Children Also Grieve and Great Answers to Difficult Questions About Death. Linda has one grown son. Welcome back to Parents' Perspective, Linda.
Oh, thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
What is the biggest myth we adults have about a child's concept of death?
The biggest myth that we have about a child's concept of death is that you don't have to talk to them about it. You don't have to tell them about it. In fact, if you talk about death to a child, it might make them feel bad or make them feel awkward. But actually, the introduction was so appropriate where Sandy explained how a child said, when is Grandpa coming back? You know, what are we doing here? Where is Grandpa? The biggest myth is that we shouldn't talk to kids about what's going on. And in that scenario that Sandy spoke of, had the parents prepared the child, told them what was going to happen, explained what a funeral was, that it was more than a parade, but it was a way to honor and respect Grandpa. And they were invited to come. You know where Grandpa's body was ahead of time. What does it mean to be buried? What is their spiritual belief system about where Grandpa is, etc.? And I think when people discard the myth of not talking to children about death, then they can begin to educate themselves on how to talk to children about death.
Speaking of which, how would you say children view death? It's certainly different than adults do, and I'm sure there's a range, but is there sort of a prism that we can gear into of how they view what death is?
Yes, children grieve death at different developmental stages, and one of the crucial ages and one that kids get stuck in and keep throughout their growing up is the preoperational stage, which is around 2 to 7. And during that age, children see death as reversible. So when that little girl said, is Grandpa coming back? Well, children think that even though Grandpa died, they went to the funeral, they went to the cemetery, if they write Grandpa a letter, he's going to write them back. And that is the common space that kids carry. And it's also very egocentric. It's filled with causality and magical thinking. And so when a child yells at his older brother, I hate you, I wish that you were dead, and the next morning he's killed in an accident, that little boy thinks that his words were what really killed his brother. And it's that magical thinking that children keep and carry, and many adults have, that they in some way caused their person to die. I worked with families after 9/11. One little 5-year-old said, Linda, it's my fault. I killed my mommy. Her mother had died in the Pentagon. I said, well, why would it be your fault? She said, well, my mommy had a cold, and I didn't make her stay home that day, so it's my fault.
Oh.
At 5, she can release her magical thinking, and we can talk about the facts about what happened. Some very bad people murdered her mom. We really need to be present. We need to not be afraid. And I think this dovetails your question about how children think and feel at different ages into what we were speaking of before about being able to talk to children age appropriately about what they're going through. Mr. Rogers says, what's mentionable is manageable. If we can find the words to use, even about a horrendous terrorist attack, down to a mom's cancer, then children are included in part of the grief process in their family. These developmental stages that you asked me about continue and change. And so that pre-operational stage changes into the concrete operations between 7 and 12, where kids have a more realistic view, where they know death isn't reversible, where they know life is finite. And then in adolescence, I think one thing that's so helpful with kids in the way that they grieve, because they so look to their peers, is to have a peer support group where they can find other kids and don't feel different and know there are other teens that are going through what they've been through.
Is there a specific recommended approach to dealing with a grieving child?
Create an open family system where kids can talk about what they're going through and grieve openly. I found that I usually allow the child to be the expert and let me know where they are in the grief process. Every child is unique and so is their grief, so that an attitude that's always helped me is to follow the child's lead. Another thing is to answer their questions, not in a finite, factual way, but to really, really respond to them. I think it's very important to have definitions of what is death. What would you say if a child said, well, what does dead mean? Dead is when the body stops working. What couldn't you do if your body stops working? You couldn't watch TV. You couldn't write a letter. Well, where is Grandpa? Well, what do you think? And 70% say my purse is in heaven. It's a perfect time to allow children the understanding that people have different spiritual beliefs, and that's okay. Whatever the family system, belief system is, honor it. And if I can say another example about honoring children as a way to work with grief, every time she saw a butterfly, one little girl felt that that was a message from her mom who had died. And her dad honored that belief system by making her a butterfly necklace so she could always feel like her mother was close to her. That is the way that we help our children.
A beautiful symbol. If it's a custom in a family to view the person, either to have a viewing of the body or to go to the open casket before the funeral and say their goodbyes, do you include a child in those things?
You include the child with respect to the child. If parents are so scared that their child is going to be so upset and don't have the words to provide, it makes it harder for the child. But if a parent can say, this is what we do, this is what Grandpa's going to look like. He went through this process. He's not living. This is his body. They prepared his body. You can touch it. You can say something. If you want, you can even draw a picture and leave it in the casket. I'll go with you. If you feel uncomfortable, this person will take you out of the room. And I find the children follow their parents' lead. I would never force a child. I would prepare them and invite them. I took my son, when he was 6 years old, to a funeral. There was an open casket. He wasn't that close to the person. It was a relative. And I had prepared him about what would be happening. But when my mother heard that he was going to look, she said, no, he cannot do that. And the funeral director came over and he said, I don't usually interfere with things, but I've known from experience that when children are told they can't look, they imagine far worse. My son Jonathan went over and he heard somebody say, she looks really good. And he looked at me and he said, she looks really good. And so it was just modeling what happened, and that was it. Yeah.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on answering children's questions about death.
The popular new book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents, by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Linda Goldman about children's questions on death.
What kinds of questions are grieving children most likely to ask?
One thing I think you'll hear is, did my person suffer? It's a very big question. Kids want to know. I worked with a little girl whose best friend and her parents were killed in the Pentagon crash. It was a sudden traumatic death. We did a lot of what we called memory work with her. She wrote a letter to the president. She wrote a poem about her friend. She made a memory box with pictures and favorite things about her friend. Yet when we asked her, what is it that you want to know? And that's a question that I do ask children. Her first question was, did my person suffer? And if you can find the answer, kids feel better. You can say, I don't know, but sometimes you can get the medical facts. No, we don't think that your person did suffer. We think they died instantaneously. That's helpful. Mm-hmm. If they did suffer, they may have, but they had medicine. This is who was with them. This is who was helping them. Because they will picture that event over and over and over again. So we have to be prepared for that question. Another question they'll ask if a parent dies is, well, what's going to happen to me? And what happens if something happens to you? And it's important to let them know and even have some input. If something happens to a surviving parent or guardian, where will they go? So they know they're not going to be abandoned. Another problem that comes up and questions that come up with grieving children when they lose a parent is when a parent starts dating. And the loss of that surviving parent to another person. I have kids write letters, and once this little girl came in, her father had started dating after her mother died. And I said, if you could just write down what you wanted to tell your dad on this letter, what would you say? She said, Dear Dad, I won't let you do this. I'm afraid I'll lose you too. So I think it's not only what am I going to do, as they would ask if my father starts dating, but really, am I going to lose a part of my father? And in reality, sometimes that does happen. Mm-hmm. The other question, and there's so many, I can't possibly say all the questions children ask, but it's a big one, is, will I forget my person? Because this is where caring adults can come and help incorporate memory work to help them remember. Memory books that kids can write and draw their memories, memory boxes that they can create with decorations that talk about their loved one. I mean, kids have put mom's eyeglasses in there or dad's dog tags from the army. Allowing children to remember by commemorating. One family system who had three children and the five-year-old died. Every year on her birthday, the whole family would have this ritual of going out together and just eating the foods all day long that that little girl loved. Let's not talk about it. When they say, will I forget? No, we will always remember. Children re-grieve at different developmental stages for the rest of their life. So when a five-year-old uses her mom, and then she's 10 and she has a ballet recital, and then she graduates high school, and then she gets married, and then she has a baby. She may often re-grieve her mother's death in different ways. And as long as we continue as allies and friends for that child to say that person's name, to share another memory, to keep that person alive in their hearts, I think it's a gift that we can do. Two wonderful teens that I worked with, their beautiful mother died of cancer. And one thing that they did was create their own memory book. They wrote a letter to every friend and relative. And they said, we loved our mother so much, we can't get enough of her. So if you would send us a picture or write a story about our mom, we would love it. And they got this beautiful book where every page was a new, wonderful thing to learn about their mother. So wherever I go, whether it's China or Washington, D.C., people ask one question. How long does grief last? You know, how long does grief last? And they want a finite answer. And I can't give them one because, you know, I know as long as you love someone, you're going to remember them. You might shed a tear 30 years later. Mm-hmm. And so acute grief and the intensity will subside But it can come back because grief is messy.
The whole concept of irreversibility is a very difficult one to communicate to children.
I think one thing is to know that it's common and that children have parallel thoughts so that they're going to be thinking, you know, death is reversible. And then we have to go and say, no, you know, death is not like magic. You can't bring the person back. But here's what you can do. You can carry inside you the kinds of things you love about that person. But we have to really be pretty firm about saying their body isn't working anymore. They can't do things that they used to do.
It seems to me that very often young children, when they think about death, think about it's sort of like sleep.
You bring up a larger topic. Certain cliches inhibit the grief process, and we have to be very careful about the words we use with young children because they take things literally. So saying to a child, "Grandpa has gone to sleep," will of course create anxieties and fears when it's bedtime. But saying "Grandpa has died," people are afraid to use the word death. If they can just say to a young child, death is when the body stops working. Grandpa has died. He will not be back. You can talk about where you think grandpa is or what you think death is and have the conversation, no matter how young, age appropriately so, but with the words that are the best for the child. When people say, grandpa died because God loved him so much. God wanted him to be with him. Well, doesn't God want me? Can't I go with grandpa too? Well, grandma's watching over you all the time. Kids can be very afraid. One little boy, a sixth grader who loved his dad that died, came in one day. He said, Linda, I've really been thinking, do you think my dad is watching over me all the time? You know, that would be very embarrassing.
And
it is cute, but that is what, you know, kids are thinking. Oh, they're watching over you. Well, no one wants anyone to watch over us 24/7. We have to be cautious about those cliches and educate in using words that are the best for the children.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on children's questions about death.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $15 with your name, mailing address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Linda Goldman about answering children's questions about death.
The other thing that seems to me to connect up with the sleep business and this cliche business is kids who have pets.
Having a pet die is such a teachable moment to prepare children for where there's a greater loss or death in the family. It is the perfect time to say, this is what death is, this is what happens. The New King is a book that's about magical thinking for young children. It's excellent because this little boy, his father is the king of a land, and he dies and he becomes the king. And the first thing he does is call the grand wizard to come and bring his father back from the dead. It's his first decree. And finally, the queen mother comes in and says, you know, death is not like magic. We can't bring your father back from the dead, but you can grow up to be a wise king like your father. And that's just what he did. It's a beautiful book. The other book, which prompted me with your question, is Goodbye, Mousie. It is the most adorable book to help young children start to have the conversation about what happens when a pet dies. And it's about a little boy whose mouse dies. And he's so sad, he doesn't want to talk, he doesn't want to eat, he doesn't want to do anything. Finally, his parents bring him over and they look at Mousie's body. It's not moving. It might feel cold. You can touch it. They put it in a little blanket and then in a box. And the little boy says, but Mousie could be hungry. So they put in some carrots or chocolate. But Mousie could be bored, so they put in some crayons. You know, but Mousie could get lonely, and he put in a picture of himself. And then he felt more comforted. They went outside. Together they buried Mousie. Then he was ready to play and have lunch. You can include children in a memorial service. You can say to a child, would you like to share something? I've participated in a child-oriented memorial service where there was an art table in the back of the room where kids could write or draw for their friend. They could go outside and blow bubbles for their friend. Their teachers were there, and they sang this little boy's favorite song, "I'm Being Swallowed by a Boa Constrictor." Mm-hmm. And the parents for all the young children that came, because he was five, made memory bags similar to goodie bags that kids would get at a birthday party, filled with little objects that they thought their son would want to give to his friends.
Oh, my.
And so the kids got to go home with something. And the kids, as a class, this kindergarten class, made a quilt of handprints. And they gave that quilt to this little boy's parents at the memorial service. And the parents so appreciated it. They said that night they put the quilt on their little boy's bed, and it was very, very comforting. So kids can actively participate.
How can we tell when a grieving child needs professional help?
Well, the first step is to know what's common, because so often parents and caring adults get scared because they see children behaving a different way. But oftentimes, grieving children are more hyperactive, have difficulty attending and listening in school, and they may even be put in a learning-disabled hyperactivity kind of a situation. If it's not recognized that many times this happens, sometimes they can concentrate. Sometimes they have stomach aches, headaches, may withdraw, may feel like nobody understands, may become the class clown, may become the class bully out of anger. This is very common. This is why it's so important for them to have a safe outlet for feelings they never felt before. And it's always good if a child is willing to talk with someone that there are grief therapists that are there for them, that do work with children. There are peer support groups starting at 5 years old so that children can see they're not alone, which is a very big way that they feel. But I think that if you are concerned, you can look for a child whose symptoms that we just talked about are very intense, acute, they're very frequent, and they don't dissipate. If a child hurts themselves or someone else, or an animal, or something like that, it's a very big sign that they really do need some outside help. If their grades are failing suddenly, and they can't seem to catch up with life, if they say anything, anything that might indicate not grieving, but really are depressed, thinking about not wanting to live, it's a question that you really have to ask from the youngest child. You know, in the recent newspaper, there were two 11-year-olds that hung themselves. They gave warning signs. But people think, oh, you know, they're just saying that. I've used the words, "I'm going to kill myself," that a young child might say, and say, "Do you really mean that?" Mm-hmm. And if they don't, it's a teachable moment to say how serious those words are. So I think there's lots of red flags that we can look for. Nobody understands me. I'm all alone in the world. I don't have anybody to talk to. And make sure that we find a resource for them.
Linda, if we do believe that a child might need some professional help, how do we find a grief counselor for a child?
If they need professional help in a group situation, I always tell people to check their local hospice. Usually hospice has bereavement groups for kids. I also have been a board member and a very active member of ADEC, the Association for Death Education and Counseling. And within ADEC, they can provide you with grief counselors and grief therapists throughout the country and in other countries, where they are certified. Their website is www.adec.org. We're powerless to control the losses and catastrophic events our children might experience, but by honoring their inner wisdom, by providing mentorship, and by giving them safe places for expression, we can empower them to become stronger and more caring human beings.
What resources would you suggest for families who want to further pursue this kind of topic?
I've just come out with a new resource that I did specifically for families, and it's called Great Answers to Difficult Questions About Death, What Children Need to Know. It's very concrete. It's very simple to read, and it really hones in on children's questions. And then I did a parallel book for children called Children Also Grieve. It has a memory book where children can talk about their person that died. Write in it. Show a picture. Draw a picture. Say goodbye. Write a letter. The two resources that I mentioned, Goodbye Mousy and The New King. If they're complex grief issues, I've written another book called Breaking the Silence that works with complicated grief, suicide, homicide, AIDS, violence, and abuse, and Raising Our Children to Be Resilient, a guide to help children with traumatic grief, sudden deaths, 9/11, hurricanes, floods. My website, which really has these resources, and also articles that can be used to help grieving children in the school, working with children in trauma, is www.childrensgrief.net.
Well, Linda Goldman, you have been such a wonderful resource for parents and grandparents and caring adults on the subject of children's grief. So we're so glad you could be with us today.
Well, I loved it. Thank you so much for having me.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of one of Linda Goldman's most recent books, Children Also Grieve, Talking About Death and Healing, and Great Answers to Difficult Questions About Death, What Children Need to Know. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. And please spell anything that's not obvious. That's a big help to us. Mention show number 412 and tell us, if you can, what station you're tuning into.
Visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org, where you can even listen to a show of your choice. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. At the end of our program, we often thank individuals or organizations for their generous donations that help with the cost of producing Parents' Perspective programming. Parents' Perspective Incorporated is a 501c3 nonprofit corporation. Today it is our turn to thank you, our listeners, for your tax-deductible contributions to our annual fundraising campaign. Donations can be made online through GiveDirect or iGive.com or MissionFish at eBay, or you can send checks or money orders to Parents Perspective Incorporated, Post Office Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015. Thank you for helping us continue to work for you. Our sound engineer is Elizabeth Buckle. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.